Hello and welcome back to the Beginning of the Outdoors podcast. Thanks for joining me. This week I have a super cool one. My cousin Kirby is actually on it with me. He grew up in Montana and has a lot of fun stories. So I chatted with him about those stories, and it's going to be fun to listen to. Let me know what you think of the actual podcast and if you like the interview stuff. Thanks again, and we'll be back with a normal podcast next week.
Well, this is Kirby.
Kirby, can you hear me yet?
Now I can hear you.
Oh,
can you
hear heavens. Me? Yes, I can hear you.
So what in the Sam Hill, you know?
I don't know. Jeez.
I mean, the last time I got your text message that you could hear me, but I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, I mean, that was way too challenging for us to figure out, but... I'm glad we're finally here, though.
Yeah, but we can't do... I guess we don't have to do video. I guess we can just do audio.
Yeah, audio is perfect for me, if that's good for you.
That's fine.
That's mostly what the podcast world is all about, is mostly listening kind of while you're working, stuff like that.
Right.
And working out and stuff. It's just easy to kind of get through it. We're going back in time, actually, I think.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Technically, yeah. I mean, you already have my snake story, or, you know.
That's true. Got your snake story. Of course, yeah. If you want to tell anything about that. But for kind of the listeners that are joining us, thanks again for coming back to the beginning of the outdoors. I got my good cousin Kirby with me from Montana. And welcome to the podcast.
Hey, well, I'm glad to be welcomed.
Good. And the reason I want to bring you on here is I know you got some crazy stories. And I think people would be interested in hearing some of these stories, as well as kind of learning about how you got your start really in hunting and how you were kind of raised and what your parents did to kind of get you pumped about hunting.
Well, I was kind of raised out, you know, in the boondocks out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, starting, I will start when I was like, 3 years old. And, wow. You know, playing out in the yard, in the garden. And we had a burn barrel, which was a big 55-gallon drum full of garbage that we would burn, you know, every couple of days.
Okay.
And one day, my dad, lit the burn barrel. And but unfortunately, there was an aerosol can, like a can of spray paint or, hairspray. And it blew up. And when as I was playing in the yard about 50 feet away, then this can went off and it blew this melted empty milk jug, plastic milk jug that was already on fire, of course, and it popped it up in the air and landed on top of my head.
Oh wow.
And so my dad had to run across the yard and try to slap this melted piece of plastic off of the top of my head that, of course, you know, well, melted to my head.
Oh, man.
And that was just one of many instances that, talk about guardian angels and stuff. There was obviously somebody or something around me that kept me alive. Starting at the age of 3. And right. Going to the age of 43, that kept me alive, because I've had lots of instances where I should be dead, you know. Really? And, you know, I've been shot, I've been kicked, I've been, you name it.
Wow. Well, I'd love to get into some of those stories. When was the first time you kind of went hunting, or do you have any memories of those start dates that you kind of have?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I got my first BB gun and I shot a robin, which, I can say that it's illegal. I can say that because, it's past the 7-year limit of,
Yeah.
But I shot a robin with a BB gun when I was 9 years old. And I had to work my way up to that. my dad would not let me have a BB gun until I went through basically hunter safety pamphlet. And even though, you know, you can legally, you know, hunt in Montana at the age of 12, I got my BB gun when I was 9. But as soon as I shot that robin, I got my BB gun taken away from me for about, oh, I don't know, a year. And that kind of taught me the lesson of being responsible with a firearm. And then I got a 22 when I turned 11. And then I made my second mistake, and I shot a wood duck, which wasn't a protected species, but it was a rare species, and my dad kind of likes wood ducks. And so then I got my privileges, you know, revoked for another 3 months. And then I learned my lesson and became a responsible, you know, hunter, and then started making guns instead of shooting them.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You worked for a company and made guns,
when I was 12. When I was 12, right. I finally saved up my money and bought a single shot 22 rifle. It was a Stevens made by Sears and Roebuck back in 1938 or something, and took it apart and cleaned it out and refinished the stock and the barrel. And that's when I learned how, you know, a gun actually works. Put it back together. And that's what I used to shoot gophers and rabbits. And then I got into cooking. I loved cooking, and I still love cooking. So, you know, one of my dad's big things was, if you're going to shoot something, you got to be ready to eat it. I mean, you don't just shoot something for fun. So when I shot rabbits or raccoons or whatever, I had to think about it first. It's like, you know, whatever I'm about to shoot, I got to be ready to eat it. You know, right. Nobody wants to shoot a skunk if they know that their dad's going to make them eat it. And so.
Right. So you never shot a skunk.
Oh, huh? I've shot a lot of skunks, and
now did you eat them?
Well, that's another story of me and my brother Jesse and Cody. When I was about 12 and Jesse was 11 and Cody was about 9, we had a trap line to catch gophers in a neighbor's field, and he paid us 10 cents per gopher. And so my dad said, no problem at all. You know, knock yourself out. Go set your traps. But do not try to trap something bigger than a gopher. You know, don't try to trap a raccoon or a skunk. And, okay. And of course, we found this hole that we thought was a badger hole. And we wanted to catch something bigger than a gopher. And so we put a trap in front of this hole. And it turned out it wasn't a badger hole. It was a skunk hole. And when we went to, you know, check our traps, here we've got this, you know, skunk. And we knew we'd get in trouble if we, you know, told my dad that we put a trap in a big hole instead of a little teeny hole. And so we figured, you know, at the time, we got to kill this thing, you know. So we kept throwing rocks at it and trying to kill it. And we eventually killed it. But by the time we killed it, it had sprayed all over just sprayed all its stink on me and my brothers. And so we didn't even get within 100 yards of the house. And my mom walked out the front door and said, stop where you're at, you know. I can smell you from here. You guys just stay there, strip down naked. This is like in the middle of summer, so thankfully it was warm. And she hosed us off with the garden hose, and that didn't really work. So then she had us spray down with Clorox bleach and tomato paste and stuff. And I mean, it took us, eventually she just sent us down to the creek and said, go swimming. Just go.
Just try to get
the
off.
Smell off. Just get down there and just scrub down and do not come back to the house until you smell normal. So we did what any Gilgi would do. We got naked because we love being naked, and we went down to the creek and we covered ourselves in mud and scrubbed ourselves down, and we still stunk like, you know, skunk. I mean, we yeah. really stank. So we just camped out for 2 days. We made our own tent and just we'd yell up the hill to mom and say, yeah, we're alive, but we still stink, so we're just gonna hang out. And we just caught, you know, fish in the creek and just hung out for a couple of days. And when we finally didn't smell like skunk, then we burned our clothes. That was kind of fun too. We actually I sent my brother Jesse up to get some gasoline from the shed, so we just basically burned our clothes, and then we got back to the house and we smelled good, you know.
There you go, like three runaway kids, but didn't really run away. That's awesome. Stories like that just crack me up of how, you know, how different our lives were, even though we are cousins. But you know my parents, you know our life. We didn't live anything like this. I mean, we had a river close to our house. We went down to it and we caught stuff in the river. But, you know, I didn't start duck hunting until I was probably 14, 15 years old with one of my buddies. And we'd always have a blast out there, of course. I saw on your Instagram page you did have arrows shot in some target. Is that something you do often?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I grew up bow hunting because it's a totally different challenge than gun hunting.
Right. I'm getting into bow hunting right now. I just purchased my first bow about 3-4 weeks ago.
What did you get?
It's a Quest. It's an AMP Quest. It's probably, mm-hmm. you know, it's a decent bow, and I'm excited for this upcoming season to see what I can do with it.
Well, you know, with bow hunting, it's kind of the same as gun hunting, only it isn't.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, people brag about their bows or their guns. Oh, I got a Hoyt, you know, I got a Hoyt bow, or I got this. It all boils down to the person. Right. How good are you at using whatever is put in your hands? And I've seen guys that can shoot a musket, a muzzle loader, better than, you know, somebody with some $3,000 rifle.
Right.
And the same thing with a bow. You know, I've seen bow hunters that have a 200-year-old recurve that shoot better than somebody with a, you know, a $700, you know, compound with, you know, special sights and everything else.
All the bells and whistles.
Yeah. It all boils down. But to me, I enjoy both. I enjoy bow hunting and I enjoy gun hunting for two different reasons. Because gun hunting, I am really, really good shooting a gun. Only recently, because of my neck surgery and stuff, I can't shoot a gun and I can't pull a bow. I did not fire a single round of ammunition or pull a bow back for the last year and a half.
Wow.
So that's kind of weird for a Gilgi, because, you know, I'm used to at least killing something, whether it's a mouse or a gopher or a rabbit or a deer, something. Right. And, you know, every year, in fact, multiple times, but I could not draw a bow or shoot a gun. But it's funny that when you're sitting around the campfire and shooting the breeze with guys that shoot guns, they brag about how far they can shoot. You know, hey, I shot an antelope at, 800 yards, or I shot an elk at 555 yards. You know, they always brag about how far they can shoot with a gun.
Yes.
And with bow hunters, the opposite is in effect. because if you brag about shooting something at 90 yards with a bow, then everybody sitting around you in the campfire, just they'll beat the crap out of you because right. That's unethical. That's the whole point of bow hunting, is to get as close to the target as possible. And so if you're going to brag about bow hunting, you can say, well, I shot an elk at 9 yards. Right. You know, I literally could have stabbed him with a sword, you know, if I, you know, was fast enough. I was that close. And so bragging rights with a bow is how close you can get to the animal without them noticing you or smelling you or hearing you.
Right.
And with a gun, it's all about how far can I be from this animal and shoot it sight unseen. And so that's why archery is, you know, I love archery.
Yeah.
You know, you actually get to be up close and personal with whatever you're shooting, whether it's a hog, you know, a wild boar, or a stag deer, or an elk, or a deer, whatever.
Yeah.
You have to think about every aspect of your body smell, your you know, where the wind direction is going, and you know.
I think that's why a lot of people are starting to get into it more. I know my friend group, and that's a big reason I got into I want to start bow hunting more often, is because a lot of them are stoked about the challenge, I think, of kind of going, you know, having a harder challenge out there in the field. And that's why I think it'll be fun with the bow, as well as I talked about it in my last podcast, how much easier it's going to be to be able to practice and, you know, sight the bow in just my backyard and all the other stuff that comes with that.
Well, I was about to say that is also the advantage, is, you know, you can shoot your arrows multiple times and then, you know, and then retrieve them and shoot them again. With a gun, you know, every time you pull the trigger, you got to buy some more ammo, you know?
Yeah.
But the key thing about, you know, archery is it is all about being consistent. It doesn't matter how you shoot or what position your hand is in. It doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. It's key that you have to do the same thing every single time.
Right.
And wherever your reference point is with your thumb or your finger, or whether you're using a release or you're using a finger tap, it doesn't matter. As long as it's the same exact thing every single time. I mean, anybody can pull a trigger on a gun.
Right.
And shoot, you know, an apple off of somebody's head at 300 yards. That's a no-brainer, you know. But nobody can shoot an apple off of somebody's head at 50 yards unless they have exactly the same motion. I mean, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the fun part about it. Now so you've had a few hunts with, obviously rifle and bows. What's one of the funnest ones you've been on? And what animals, kind of have you shot before? We're gonna skip all the small animals, because I bet you could have a list, a couple hundred. But
yeah, I would say the funnest one, believe it or not, was with my brother Cody, because I had already shot my whitetail buck with my bow a week prior, and then we went down to the Missouri Breaks. And that's, you know, a couple of hundred miles from here. It's in the middle of nowhere, on the Missouri River. And we went out to go elk hunting, because I had an elk tag, and so did Cody and everything else. And we got up about 4 o'clock in the morning and headed out. And we had to hike about 3 miles to get in. And all of a sudden, I saw a bunch of mule deer and a couple of good bucks coming down this draw in front of us. And so I couldn't even whistle. I couldn't even make any sound. So I just tapped my brother on the shoulder, and you know, he knew what that meant. That means get down.
Right.
And so I whispered it in his ear and I said, there's a buck, you know, 11 o'clock, straightforward. So my brother paused. He didn't do anything. And I was like, why are you not doing anything? Well, he forgot that I'd already used my tag. I couldn't shoot. I couldn't shoot a deer. I could only shoot an elk. And so we made eye contact, and I whispered to him, I said, I don't have a tag. And then, because we had our bows strapped to our backpacks, because we were hiking in. I mean, the sun was just coming up, barely. I mean, it was shooting light, but I mean, barely. And so he's trying to push me to get my bow off of my pack. And I'm like, and I'm trying to, you know, with my eyeballs, trying to tell him, you know, I don't have a tag. Yeah. You got to get your bow out. So all of a sudden he realized, holy crap. So he got his pack off, took his bow off of his pack, got a, you know, an arrow knocked up. And by this time, I'm already recording on my phone, and have my rangefinder out, and I'm shooting ranges for him. And so I shoot a range and it's 92 yards,
oh, wow,
which is pretty dang long for a bow shot. But he's finally knocked up. And my brother Cody is one hell. Well, I mean, one incredibly good bow shooter. I mean, 90 yards to him is 30 yards to me. I've seen him hit pop cans at 90 yards 3 times out of 4.
Wow.
So I whisper 90 yards, 90 yards, 90 yards. And he shoots, hits, because we're both kneeled down. We're trying to stay out of sight. He hits this sagebrush with his arrow, and it's on the video. And it glances off, goes into nowhere. And so he's frustrated. Another arrow. The deer don't even scatter. They heard something, but they don't know what's going on. So they kind of stay put. And so my brother whispers back to me. He's like, which one is bigger? And I said, well, the second one, the third one from the front. And then I shot it, and it was 90 yards on the dot. So he re-knocks up and shoots, and he hits it. But he was just a little bit back. And he had Luminox because they legalized Luminox. The year before, so we could actually see the arrow, and it was kind of a lever shot. It was right behind the rib cage, and so anyway, that deer bounced up and then kind of bedded down a couple hundred yards away. And so again, this was like, you know, right at sunup. And so Cody, my brother, just said, you know what, why don't you go, you know, look for elk? And I put a GPS waypoint on my GPS. And I said, well, I'll find you back here. And he was just going to wait it out, let that deer die, and, you know, and, or, you know, stalk it and, you know, maybe get another shot, you know, another arrow into it. So I headed off my merry way. And 2 hours later, I got on some elk about a mile away. And I followed those elk. Oh my gosh. I followed those elk. I mean, they were right in front of me every stinking step. And I had a 4x4 right there on my right. And I mean, 10 yards away, I could have drilled them. But I didn't have a tag because I already shot tag. And so I'm looking for elk, not deer. So I'm hoping that this deer does not jump and spook the elk that I'm trying to track. And the deer jumps, spooks the elk. The whole hunt is done for me. Now I'm a mile and a half away from my brother. And so I go up and go back to my GPS waypoint, and I see my brother walking towards me with his head hanging down. And now by this time it's getting dark. I mean, I spent the whole day hunting elk. He spent the whole day stalking this deer, and it's sundown, and he's just like, I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, he jumped the deer and didn't get, he got another shot, but it missed, and he's just downtrodden. So, you know, we're just going to have to find him in the morning. And so we both trudge back a mile, you know, and a half plus to the truck and go back to camp and get up early in the morning. And
you find it?
Well, here's where I beat the living crap out of my brother, because we get out there, you know, spot on, you know, sun up next morning, and we're trying to find the same coulee that he shot this deer in. And we get there, and he's like, well, I chased it down here. Well, of course, he had already gutted it out. He already knew where it was. He was basically being a typical brother. And he stuck one of his Luminoc arrows in a tree above where the deer was dead and already gutted out. And so he made me walk literally a mile and a half to, you know, try to trace this deer and, you know, do the blood trail right. Kind of thing. He already knew where it was. And he had me go ahead, and I got my binoculars on as the sun's coming up. And all of a sudden I see this bright green light, and I'm like, hey, Cody, come up here, I see something. And he's like, Cody, what do you see? I said, well, I see an arrow, you know, it might be in the deer, we might have to, you know, stock up on it, you know. And then he starts laughing, because, well, obviously he'd already gutted it out and it was already dead, you know. And I literally, if I'd have had a gun, I probably would have shot him if I didn't like him so much. He made me walk like a mile and a half just to find the deer that he'd already found and gutted out. And,
yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the typical brother situation there. But that's it.
We had a good laugh about it later. Yeah, I mean, at least
not it was fun at the moment, right? But after it, I'm sure it's a funny, good time. Do you still hunt with your brother Cody often, or?
I would last year, except for the fact that my neck surgery, couldn't.
Tell me about, you know, what happened to your neck.
Oh gosh. You know what, Dan? Obviously, it was a long time in coming. It was just years and years of working my tail off that caught up to me, and so I literally was just checking the oil in a car, and I bent over wrong, and that was it. All of a sudden, I couldn't move my right arm, everything just fell apart. And I spent a month and a half with a chiropractor, like your dad, and trying to get it fixed, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And so we finally did some x-rays, and it turns out that I had a herniated disc, and so I had to go into surgery, and they had to cut through my front of my neck and then remove an entire chunk of my spinal column and replace it with a cadaver bone from a dead person. Cool. And then put in a titanium plate. To fuse it, which it didn't fuse. And so, yeah. So I'm still kind of dead in the water. You know, I got my C5 from C7 is connected with this titanium plate, but the bone didn't fuse. And so I'm better than I was before. I can walk around and talk to you, but I
can't do much more.
I'm still kind of... So since April of last year, I haven't worked a single day.
Oh, wow.
I haven't I haven't made a single dollar.
Well, sorry about that, and hopefully it starts getting better. Crazy stories that you'd like to share before the end? Any cool ones that you think people would enjoy? And
how crazy of a story do you want?
Whatever's crazy enough where it's not, you're not worried about it, you know?
Okay. Well, I would say let's go back to snakes.
Okay. Snake story.
So, yeah. So, being as I kind of, you know, grew up catching snakes and taming them, believe it or not. And the word got out that I knew how to tame snakes. And so they were laying down a natural gas line down the county road kind of near our house. And anyway, to make a long story short, basically, the guys that were laying the natural gas line had already seen my pet snakes because I had bull snakes and garter snakes and you name it, and even rattlesnakes. And so they caught this bull snake that was about 7 feet long. I mean, it was a pretty big snake. Okay. I mean, taller than me by a foot. And so they came to the house and said, well, do you want this snake? And I said, well, of course, yeah. And so I tamed the snake. And then the next day, as they were drilling for natural gas, they found another snake that had been hit by a car and was blind in one eye. And a smaller snake. And we called him Bullseye because he had on one side. And my brother Jesse kind of babysat Bullseye while I took care of the big snake. And so we had these pet snakes. And one day I was, 15 years old. And my brother was 13 and Cody was 12. Anyway, I asked Jesse to watch my snake and Bullseye in the yard. Well, I went in and got the phone. Remember, this is like 30 years ago.
Right.
So we didn't have cell phones. There was just one phone on the wall. When it rang, you had to answer it. And so I went and got the phone, and it was just a neighbor or whatever, you know. When I came back, lost the snake. And I eventually caught it again. But then by that time, the word had gone out that we had these snakes. And so the science teacher at the local, you know, public school heard about it. And we were homeschoolers. So, you know, we weren't part of the public school system. But when the science teacher found out that we had these snakes that were tamed, he invited us to, you know, show his students, you know, about snakes.
Oh, wow.
So we showed up at the public school. And unfortunately, that day, that teacher got sick and had to call in sick. So here we are, you know, a bunch of homeschoolers with snakes wrapped around our necks and arms and everything. You know, like a fish out of water. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, and, all of a sudden some kid from some other class came running out and saw us with these snakes. And he's like, oh, you got to come to my class. You know, you got to show my teacher.
Right.
So he ran back to his teacher and, said, you know, we got these knuckleheads out here in the hallway. With snakes wrapped around their neck. And I went to, me and my brother Jesse and my brother Cody went, you know, to every class. I mean, science and grade school, everything, high school, you name it.
Wow.
And we just bounced around just showing off Bullseye and all these snakes. and took a spot 3 hours.
Oh, wow. Didn't expect
and
it.
I was kind of impressed with the teachers to the fact that they kind of, you know, stopped what they were doing, you know, whatever, you know, class they were in to, you know, let some knucklehead high schoolers, or I mean homeschoolers, you know, come in with snakes wrapped around their arms and legs and necks and stuff.
Yeah.
I was kind of impressed. I was, you know, at the end of the day, we left with our snakes, and I'm sure everybody, well, hopefully everybody got to learn something about snakes and how they react and, you know.
Oh yeah. In any other school, that wouldn't happen. That would be,
yeah.
But I think, in your location of the world, you know, it's a little bit more accepted to walk into a school with a bunch of snakes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's, you know, it was, you know, remember, this is like, you know, literally 30 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, and it was a small town. I would say, you know, Chinook was probably population, maybe 1,000 people.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, the whole town.
Right.
1,000. So, you know, the graduating class in high school was like 20, you know. And so, yeah, it was a little more casual as far as, you know, nobody walks in with snakes wrapped around their neck.
Yeah.
And, you know, be accepted.
Teachers welcome.
Yeah. You go to, you know, Southern California or Florida or something, and you have a python wrapped around you, you better get, you know, permission slips and, you know, everything from the parents. But, you know, if you're a Gilgi and you're in Northern Montana, then, you know, literally a snake wrapped around your neck is no big deal.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
cool.
It could be no big deal.
How cool is that?
So
that's sweet. Well, thank you, Kirby. That's an awesome story to end with. Do you have anything else you want to say about the outdoors and to anybody out there trying to get into going outside a little bit more often, or just, you know, becoming more of an outdoors person?
Well, the only thing I could say is, I just know from experience that when you get into the outdoors and really just get off the beaten path, I mean, go hiking, but not on the trail, like just, you know, go find a quiet place and just sit down and just take a deep breath and realize that everything was created by God. And when you just take a deep breath and just remember, in the Bible that it says, be still and know that I am God. And if you just, you know, just be still, just sit down for a second, for goodness sakes, and just take in the fact that everything around you was created for a purpose, including yourself, and just revel in, and just, that's it.
Cool.
Take a deep breath. That's it.
Yeah. We have a hard time nowadays with all the social media and everything, but, thanks again, Kirby. I mean, I appreciate it. I'm glad we were able to catch up, and I'm hoping to have you again, in the future and be able to chat some more. And I know for me personally, I love the idea of having those crazy stories with your brothers. And, you know, we have crazy stories, but we're city folk. So we have different stories, you know.
Well, and the next time we talk, you can tell me your story of how crazy, you know, you got in the city.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my mom and dad, they listen to this. So I don't know. I'd probably have to edit most of it out, but you know, what can you do? I'm just kidding. But you know, I appreciate it, Kirby, and thanks for taking time to come be with me. And I'll edit it and post it up, and hopefully your family can listen to it and enjoy it, and hopefully we can have you on again. Thanks. And please subscribe and like the channel if you can to keep things going. All right, bye-bye.
No problem. Thanks, Dan.